Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The housing market has been core to the U.S. economy and to the economic recession. The federal government's been spending a lot of energy and money to keep it from further collapse. Is it working? Is it coming back, due for another plunge for more support? This hour, On Point, we're looking at home prices, housing, the U.S. economy, and what comes next. Joining me first today from Washington, D.C. for the latest developments is Diana Olick, real estate correspondent for CNBC. Diana Olick, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So first, big picture, what's the word? Is the U.S. housing market leveling off or just in a pause here? What do the numbers show, Diana?
Well, the numbers show that things are really getting what we use the term as less worse. That is, they're not as bad as they were. They're not in free fall when we talk about sales and prices the way they were in the past year. But they're not exactly growing the way we might like them to see as well. Home prices are still down. Sales have been bumped up in the spring a little bit and definitely got juiced by that first-time homebuyer tax credit that you talked about, that $8,000 in extra purchasing power. But we did see them go down last month, and now is the question as to when we get into the fall and we look at the expiration of that tax credit, where will sales go? So I'd say we're at a really crucial turning point right now, especially as we see foreclosures continuing to rise, and that's adding inventory onto the market. This is the point where we have to say, do we need more juice from the government, or should we just let the market correct in itself? In which case we're probably going to see more months of pain ahead.
Give us a sense, Diana, of the scale of what the federal government, the juice that it's already pumped into the U.S. housing market.
Well, the estimates are that 355,000 sales would not have occurred were it not for that $8,000 first-time homebuyer tax credit. That's the argument that lawmakers are making who want to extend it. And in fact, Senator Johnny Isaacson is before the Senate banking hearing today making that case. But the question is, again, those sales were mostly on the low end of the market because that's where you find your first-time home buyers. And we did see a great surge in sales on the low end, eating up some of that foreclosed inventory. But the higher end of the market, even the mid-level move-up market, is just completely frozen right now, much of that due to lack of credit, jumbo loans, et cetera. So there's a big argument to be made, and Sean Donovan, the HUD secretary, actually is saying in testimony today that while they do need to do something for to juice housing a bit more, he's a little, you know, more hesitant than we might expect. He says he's mindful of the proposals that can be very expensive, especially at a time of significant budget deficits. So that's a sign that maybe the administration is not quite as behind that tax credit or extension and expansion of it as we may have thought.
Johnny Isaacson, a Republican of Georgia, and Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut are pushing for an amendment that would not only extend it through next June at a cost of $16, $17 billion, but would also invite in more takers for this tax credit, right? Not just the $75,000 or $150,000 joint income would qualify.
Right. Right. They're upping that to $300,000 income for families, and they're also opening it not just to the first-time home buyer. So that opens it up to a lot more people. So you would definitely get more buyers into the market. The question is, where are they? Are they on the low end? Are they eating up that inventory that is already much lower, that is the $100,000 to $200,000 home? Or will they get you more into the higher levels? And how much is it going to cost? Because if you get that many more people into the system, they estimate $16 billion, but would it be more than that? I mean, we saw a huge run on cash for clunkers, so you have to wonder how much it's going to cost.
Now, what about other supports? The Federal Reserve has been quietly propping up the mortgage market, pumped maybe $840 billion into mortgage-backed securities to keep those interest rates down. Are they on track to keep that up, or does that change too?
Well, that expires at the end of March, and that's a real concern for folks I talk to in the mortgage market because they are artificially keeping mortgage rates low. We saw them dip below 5%, and that's a huge boon to housing to have mortgage rates that low. Now, remember, historically speaking, mortgage rates have been much higher in the past, 8, 9, 10%, and we've still had a housing market. But today's buyers are so jittery and so used to such low mortgage rates, their memory seems to be very short. So even if we were to see after the Fed stops buying Fannie and Freddie securities, if we were to see mortgage rates go up to 5.5% or 5.75% or even go near 6%, that could be a huge problem for the housing market because today's buyers see 6% and say, oh, God, I'm priced out of that market, especially now that lending standards are much tougher and they don't have any of those mortgage products anymore, the subprime products where you could put no money down or low doc, no doc loans. Those don't exist anymore. So people are much more leery even when rates get to 6%.
What about the prospect of another tumble in home prices, Diana? This Fiserv out of, I guess, New York Today financial analysis firm is predicting plunging home values in 342 out of 381 U.S. markets during this next year. They're talking about big steps down again in lots of communities where we've already seen hard-hit housing markets.
Well, that's because of the rising foreclosures that we talked about. I mean, that's where the market is happening. That's where sales are taking place. So if you look at median prices and you say the only activity is happening on the lower end of the market, that means it's going to skew your median price lower. So when we have more foreclosures coming to market, when you have the banks working through these foreclosures more quickly now that they've got the government home affordable modification system in place, they're beginning to really pump out the ones that will qualify and the ones that will not. So you're seeing more foreclosure sales coming onto the market. And if that's where the activity is, that's going to skew the price lower. Does that mean that a $600,000 home in one of those markets is now $400,000? It doesn't necessarily mean that. It just means there's no market for that home right now. Nobody's buying it at any price. So, again, you have to look at where the numbers go with what exactly is selling.
But 694 million mortgages already delinquent, a lot of those could be back on the market as discounted foreclosures in the coming
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. And that's what we're talking about. And the question now is how many of more expensive homes are going to go into foreclosure now that we're seeing that it's less of a subprime problem and more of a prime loan and jumbo loan problem.
If you don't have a job, you can't pay the mortgage sooner or later.
Exactly. And that's where we talk about the modification programs, which the banks are really ramping up. The problem is you cannot give someone a modification if they have no income or if they have reduced income that really doesn't meet what these programs are trying to do. They just can't afford any payment.
So this housing crisis story is by no means over. Diana Olick with CNBC, great to have you. Thanks very much for joining us, Diana.
Thank you.
I want to welcome right now from Wellesley, Massachusetts, Carl Case, professor of economics at Wellesley College, co-creator with economist Robert Shiller of the Case-Shiller Home Price Index, the most widely used database of housing prices in the country. Carl Case, great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Tom.
We'll go to federal interventions and what maybe should go on or maybe shouldn't go on, but first just to the market itself. What do you see happening? Do you see another downturn here? I think your index is showing a kind of leveling. Is it sturdy?
Well, interesting. Our firm is owned by Fiserv. I had not seen that Fiserv forecast.
You got to be fast to keep up with us, Carl.
You do. My sense is that housing prices have stopped falling for the moment. There's still a huge pipeline. A lot depends on what happens to this credit. But if you look at the numbers on the market, it's hard not to find reasonably positive numbers. Our price index was down 30% from peak. So house prices have fallen over 30%. It's just unbelievable. And it's concentrated in certain areas, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Miami, San Francisco. California is very bad. California is a quarter of the country. But in the last couple of months, last 3 months really, prices have begun to flatten out almost everywhere. They're not rising. They're rising in some places a small amount. But the fact that they've flattened out, if you look historically at turns in regional cycles, once they flatten out and start to go up, it's hard to make them go back down, not to say that they might not.
But here's Fiserv, who owns your index, and they're saying home prices about to get much cheaper. And, I mean, they're talking big drops. Miami, they're forecasting down another 29% by next June. Las Vegas, 23%. Phoenix, another 23% down.
Yeah, if you look
another,
at those,
in addition to, you know, we know what they've fallen already, a lot.
Right. I mean, but if you look at California was one of those we used to include with Florida, Arizona, and Nevada as the worst.
Mm-hmm.
California is the quarter of the country. Prices were up the last 3 months, and they're up 2.5%, 3% on the month. So, and if you look at existing home sales, pending home sales, housing starts, new home sales, and in particular new home inventory, which is down to 262,000, it's up, it's down 65%. Inventory is only 7.3 months. So there are signs that things are bottoming. No sign of much of a recovery. Mm-hmm. And it depends on how much you think this $8,000 credit is contributing.
Carl, we understand why these trade groups would want more of the tax credit in there, realtors and home builders and mortgage brokers. That's obvious. It's a federal kind of subsidy for their business. But what about you as an economist? Are you for more months and more billions of federal subsidy tax credits a year?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm right on the edge. I think we devote a tremendous amount of resources to housing, home ownership. Deductibility of mortgage interest costs us about $90 billion of revenue a year. It's really over $140, $150 billion that we're spending now to subsidize home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at this credit, about 2 million would use it if we extended it. But of that number, Diana pointed out that correctly that only about 350, she was using that as a large number,
mm-hmm.
but 350,000 home sales would happen that wouldn't have otherwise happened. That's about $40,000 per new home buyer.
Because maybe 1.8 million people use this tax credit, even if it didn't make the difference. They might have bought anyway in general.
Right. That's the point, that only of that one point, I think it's closer to 2 million by the time it's all said and done. Only 383,000, according to a Brookings study, would not have taken place without the credit.
Okay, so we have a lot of listeners calling in here already on this. Chris in Bluffton, South Carolina. Chris, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Carl, thank you. I'm a realtor, so I do have a bit of an agenda, you could say, but I'm a strong supporter of the tax credit, and not only should it be extended, but it should be enlarged.
Why?
It should be a much larger figure, and it to include all people who are wanting to buy a house. Maybe with the exception of investors.
Why, Chris? But, I mean, we end up with the federal government floating the whole housing market? Must we do that?
Well, you know, if one looks at it, what is the economy is driven by the consumer and the consumer spending. We've got to be able to put equity back into the American citizens' homes. That has all gone. There's no manufacturing economy that's going to bring back jobs unless somebody in the street starts to spend some money on something. And the equity has gone from everybody's homes. They need to start putting that back. Instead of putting all that money, TARP money, into the banks a year ago, if they had maybe given everybody who has a mortgage $10,000, every single person, whether they needed it or not, those who needed it might have helped them. It could have stabilized the prices. Those who didn't need it could have saved it, or they could have spent it.
That's a lot of money. Are you worried about a cash for clunkers kind of bust on the other side of this program if it's not extended, Chris?
No. Well, yes, I do, because I think I really believe that it has stimulated interest in sales. You do have people who are currently renting who have been cautious with their money and are ready to buy, and this has helped push them off the fence and buy in a time when there's not really a lot of optimism out here. I had a deal fall through this week where there was a guy with fantastic credit, low debt, was able to put down 10 to 15%, but it was for a second home because he wanted for vacation retirement. Can't the mortgage. So the bank went from giving money to anybody who breathed and even to some people who didn't breathe anymore to now not even giving it to people who were under normal circumstances. They would be begging them to give, you know, to get their business.
Chris, we've got the picture, and I appreciate your call. We're going to hold that vision right there from Bluffton and get another call here from Boston. Wendy, you're on the air. What do you think, Wendy?
Well, I really don't get a lot of this argument because as far as I'm concerned, home prices here in Boston are still really inflated in comparison to people's median incomes. So I don't understand what the benefit is of keeping home prices unrealistically inflated. Why don't we just let them fall to a place where normal people who have not been able to get into the market can?
So they don't float out of reach of maybe you and a lot of others?
Definitely they're out of reach of me, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get in. And then the $8,000 homebuyer credit comes in, and that's great, but it sets up a bidding war, and the And I think some of the homes that are being sold now with these bidding wars, they're just going for values that they aren't really worth. Mm. And if the tax credit is extended to people who are already in the housing market and already have enough money to afford a home...
People of much higher incomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happens to all the people who can't get into the market to begin with? And why doesn't the national discussion ever include those of us who have always been shut out?
You're here right now, Wendy, and let us pick it up. Let those prices come on down, you argue. Carl Case, stand by if you'd be good enough. I want to welcome into this conversation on exactly this point Thomas Lawler. He joins us from Leesburg, Virginia. He's an independent housing economist, founder of Lawler Economic and Housing Consulting. Tom Lawler, thanks for being here.
Oh, I absolutely love to be here.
So here's the tax credit. It has helped maybe 350,000 people get into first-time homes. How do you see it? Should it be extended to keep this market from collapsing further? Should it be, you know, wrapped up and done?
I think it should be eliminated. I mean, it was originally put in to give a temporary boost to housing, partly because the mortgage markets were in disarray and partly to help reduce inventories. Since then, you know, as one person said, the Federal Reserve is committed to buy $1.25 trillion of agency mortgage-backed securities to keep mortgage rates low.
Mm-hmm.
FHA increased its loan limits last year, and as a result, government-subsidized insurance is available to not just low and moderate income, but middle to upper income folks. We have the government spending $75 billion on mortgage modifications to help deal with some of the foreclosure problems. Now they're giving more government support to the housing finance agencies. You have the mortgage interest deduction. You've got the exemption from capital gains. How much more do you want?
So if we don't come in again, as Johnny Isaacson and Chris Dodd would have it, with an extended and expanded tax credit, do you think that will bring American home prices down? As our caller Wendy says, bring them on down to me where I can afford them, or do you think they would be leveling out on their own? How do you imagine it?
Well, I think they have been leveling. Yeah, it varies everywhere. Boston isn't the same as Vegas, isn't the same as
mm-hmm.
Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, in a number of parts of the country, one of the reasons home prices have been leveling out and even expanding is they fell, and I'm not going to, maybe not in certain parts of Boston, but in a lot of the parts of the country, to levels that were consistent with area incomes for the first time in a while. And you combine that with the fact that the government is now supporting the mortgage market. So if you're willing to go the full Monty on documentation and get mortgages the old-fashioned way, getting a mortgage isn't that tough. The other part, and this is important to recognize, is the tax credit is incredibly expensive. The first-time home buyer tax credit currently, given the incremental number of new home sales generated, it costs somewhere around $40,000 per new home sale. If it's expanded, it could be $100,000 or $200,000. And Jiminy Cricket, that's not really helping that much for the job market. It's costing an awful lot, but it's not concentrated.
Carl Case, if it's that clear, it's very clear to Thomas Lawler, that it's not worth it, but you're on the fence. Why are you on the fence then, Carl?
Well, the real reason is that home prices are the collateral against mortgages that are outstanding. And if that collateral loses value, then the mortgages we've been writing in 2008 and 2009 could go bad. And that could push us right into a second dip in the recession. So stabilizing home prices is really very important. And marginal changes in what we're doing could help. Certainly, I'm not denying what the woman from Boston said. Affordability is a big issue. This has been a huge boon. This downturn is the most successful housing affordability program ever. But the government is doing a tremendous amount now, as Mr. Lawler points out. I mean, we do have a huge amount coming through of tax benefits to home ownership. We've got we've pushed interest rates to zero at the short end. We've got the mortgage rate being held down by this $1.25 trillion in purchases. We're doing an awful lot now. On the other hand, seeing house prices turn around is quite important in terms of what will happen in the mortgage market. The value of the paper held by financial institutions, the new mortgages which have been written all could go bad if house prices resume their downward trend in general. They're certainly going to go down in places that have excess supply that has to be worked off. Phoenix, Florida, Nevada are going to take some time. But if we could stabilize the rest of the market, not bringing prices up, there would be some real benefit to it.
Let's get a call here from Detroit and Barbara. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm from Detroit. I'd just like to make the point that the banks are not responding very well to the remortgaging effort that the government has been trying to promote. We're seeing a lot of our friends and neighbors try to remortgage. The banks don't respond to them. We keep hearing about this.
You mean renegotiate so they don't go into foreclosure or problems like that?
Exactly, mm-hmm. And they have the income to renegotiate, mm-hmm. but they can't get through the process. Mm-hmm. It seems like the banks have no incentive to do this. We're all worried about the second wave of foreclosures, but the banks aren't doing what they can to prevent it. The government report that came out yesterday supported that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm watching my neighborhood completely fall apart, houses filled with black mold that will never be livable again without major reconstruction, and you know, my house value keeps dropping, and I'm losing equity. Although I'm one of the lucky few who isn't in the position of losing their house.
But here's another angle on what the government might do, that is encourage or demand that banks move more swiftly and broadly to renegotiate these mortgages. Let us pick that up, Barbara, and I appreciate your call. Tom Lawler, how about it? Is there more that could be done on that front, and would you favor it?
Well, I think she makes a good point, is that if you're going to use stimulus dollars and government money, she's not going to be helped. And a lot of Detroit ain't going to be helped by an $8,000 first-time tax credit because it doesn't help existing folks with existing mortgage where they're way upside down. It just doesn't help. I think you need to focus stimulus on more efforts to help on the folks who are having difficulty with their mortgages. I think the refinance effort has been horribly slow and very inefficient. And the other thing I think we need to be focusing on is if you're going to have stimulus number, you got to focus on job creation, and the first-time home buyer tax credit really doesn't help. If we could get more job creation producing more household formations, the demand for housing would go up, and there would be absolutely no doubt that home prices would stabilize.
Let's get a call from Chelsea, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
While I've been sitting on hold, there's just so many things that I want to say. But my original reason for calling was to add into the conversation something that I haven't heard.
Okay.
Believe it or not, because I've heard so much. But nobody's talking about something that I got in a seminar earlier this week in terms of the amount of ancillary economic activity that's actually created every time a home is sold. And I just heard somebody say something about job creation. I've also heard discussions about price stabilization and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I sell real estate. I work out of Back Bay, but I sell real estate all over the greater Boston area. And one of the things that I'm seeing that's very troubling is problems with appraisal. And certainly price stabilization would help that. It would also help people who are in their homes and upside down.
What's the problem with the appraisal, Michael? You can't get a tab on what it's worth or what?
Well, I'm not sure that value. I think value is kind of a moving target right now in a market this crazy. But appraisers, the appraisal process has become a lot more stringent, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's more regulated, and that's not bad. But only willing to go back 3 months looking for comps, and the economic activity in the last 3 months doesn't necessarily bear out value, and purchasers who are otherwise, financially qualified to borrow are getting shut down by banks because appraisals are not coming back at the purchase price. And in some cases, mm-hmm. ones I've been with personally, where there were multiple offers on a property and a lot of interest in it, and, you know, that seems to be an indication of market value to me. If there's demand for a property at a certain price, however, the comps mm-hmm. that the appraiser is coming up with don't substantiate that, and that's a condition of the fact that, you know, there's many foreclosed properties, there's bank-owned, bank-sold, and short sales and so on, properties being sold under duress. And in the absence of any other comparables, appraisers are forced to use those. And I'm not sure that's an accurate indication of value.
So hard to find a kind of footing, a value footing there, when comparable sales are all over the place and maybe pretty punky. Michael, thanks for your call. Carl Case, let me bring this to you. I'm looking here at the Seattle Times, for example. The argument Michael first was making there about the ripple effect of economic activity around homes and real estate. You know, Seattle Times saying here for every 1,000 home sales, there's 112 million in economic activity generated, with 71 million directly from home sale preparation and 700 new jobs created. What about that aspect?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, if you look at the downturn that we had, you can trace about $450 billion of decline in GDP just to the decline in new construction, just to the decline in new home sales. And it's big numbers. If you think of, we were at 2.2 million back in early 2006. Today, we're down around 598,000. So we've given up
about
75
or 80% of the market. Is that new
home starts? Housing starts.
Uh-huh.
So it has a huge effect. The responding to a couple of the other comments, though, there are a lot of reasons why you can't get deals done. I mean, the incentives aren't there for people to do them. The complexity of what's happened. When you take a mortgage, sign a mortgage, it gets sold three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
It gets wrapped in securities. There's so many people who have to sign off on it. It's become a problem. And despite the best efforts of everybody in Washington to get these things restructured so they don't go into foreclosure. Foreclosure is the worst thing that can happen because the property gets trashed. It ends up just creating costs to everybody. But still, it's been very difficult to get this pipeline of bad mortgages cleaned up, even though deals would make everybody better off.
But there's a risk on that downside, even as people trying to reach up and get into that market who've been shut out. Let me go to Gerald in Columbia, South Carolina. Gerald, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
The point that I was wanting to make is the simple fact that this housing market issue is causing a major problem on class separation right now. You know, wages have only gone up about 10 to 15% in the last 15 years, and housing has gone up basically has quadrupled in the last 15 years. A prime example is my father's house cost him $60,000. 15 years ago, his house is worth about $225,000 now.
And on your wages, maybe you couldn't buy your dad's own house.
Oh, absolutely not. I could have bought it 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm, right.
I can't get close to it nowadays.
Right. Class divide. Tom Lawler, what do you say to that? And thanks, Gerald.
Well, no, I think it's a good point, although it's, you know, that's where he is. But if you go to a lot of other places like Des Moines, like Pittsburgh or whatever, mm-hmm. you haven't seen the same sort of home price appreciation. But, you know, there's one other point that no one else has mentioned, and that is we're talking about first-time home buyer credit,
mm-hmm.
mortgage modifications. No one's talked about what about renters. What help is being given to renters? First-time home buyer tax credit has shifted a lot of people from being a renter to being a homeowner. And in last quarter, the apartment vacancy rate was the highest in 23 years.
So give some break for the renters in here?
How many renters are in danger of losing their home? And if you rent a home, it's still your home,
mm-hmm.
Because of job losses or economic conditions. Answer is nobody knows because nobody tracks it. Because that's not the source of a lot of the financial problem. But no one is focused on what about renters. We're throwing enormous amount to the home area. We're trying to get people who are renting to buy a home, creating more vacancies in the rental market. And as a result, the construction of new multifamily starts, as we showed up in
trouble.
Report.
Tom Lawler, hold the thought. We'll come back and look at it. Carl Case, we're looking at homes, home prices. This is On Point. Joining us right now from San Diego, California, Mark Zandi, chief economist and co-founder of MoodysEconomy.com. He's been a leading voice in arguing for extending the housing tax credit. Mark Zandi, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
We're hearing a lot of counter-argument here. In fact, on Capitol Hill today, you've got Johnny Isaacson of Georgia saying, we've got to do this. He's never seen a real estate market like this. He and Chris Dodd are saying, let's extend and expand through next June. On the other hand, this just in from Reuters, Mark, Barack Obama's top housing advisor, HUD, Housing Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan, saying, expressing doubts about extending that tax credit. Why are you pushing so hard for it, Mark?
I think the housing market continues to be under tremendous pressure. The housing crisis, the foreclosure crisis continue on, and I think it poses the most significant threat to the broader economy, to jobs, to unemployment. And, you know, I think the housing market is oversubsidized and those subsidies should be reduced, but this isn't the time to do it. The housing market's on life support, and it's too early to take it off.
So are you for the Isaacson-Dodd plan that would kind of take the lid off, more or less, income limits on who could get this tax credit and apply it to all home purchases, not just first-time purchases? Are you in that corner?
I would at the very least extend the current credit for first-time buyers through mid-next year. Hopefully by mid-next year, the job market is up and running and the housing market can live without the credit. I think there is a reasonable argument to expand it to all buyers and raise the income caps. There has been some discussion about increasing the size of it. I don't think that's necessary.
Up to $15,000 maybe from eight.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. But I think the $8,000 has top credit has proven to be very effective, and we don't need to do that.
And what about the scenario if it's not extended? What do you fear could happen, Mark?
I think house prices are going to decline regardless because we have a lot of foreclosures in train, but I fear that the price declines will be even more severe and undermine the very fragile economic recovery. The recession is over. The economy is growing, but it's not growing fast enough to create any jobs and to bring down unemployment, and it won't as long as house prices are declining.
So, but what about Sean Donovan? The secretary brings up budget deficits, which a lot of people have been talking about today, looking at the value of the dollar and you know, international trust in the U.S. economy, not to mention just the debt itself. And he's saying we can't just, you know, pour money willy-nilly here. We've got a deficit to keep an eye on.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. I think, though, in the very near term for 2010, we have to remain aggressive and live with high deficits to make sure that the economy gets back on track. But I think policymakers need to be working on a policy that will reduce long-term budget deficits, health care reform, energy policy, tax policy. Those are the things that are really going to matter for the long run. And one other point, if we don't get this economy back on track in 2010, our long-term fiscal problems are going to be even more severe.
Carl Case, there's the argument for extending it, maybe not expanding it, but at least extending it, because Mark Sandy says, you know, home prices and the whole economy are still vulnerable here.
I've known Mark for many years, and we generally agree on everything, and I think I agree with him on this one. But I just can't get off my mind the fact that we've done $750 billion in a stimulus package. We're doing $140 billion through the income tax and through other subsidies to home ownership. We've got the lowest interest rates we can have. We've pushed the short rate to zero, and we're buying $1.25 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities to keep those rates low. The Fed is doing everything in its power. The Congress is. And this is, you know, there's at some point you've got to call a halt. And I agree that it's fragile recovery. I agree that the housing market is fragile, and I agree that the housing market is absolutely central to keeping this thing going. So I understand what Sean Donovan is saying, and I understand mm-hmm. what Mark is saying. And it's a tough call. It's just a very tough call.
Tom Lawler, you say now's the time to call a halt, to say enough is enough. Why now? What about the vulnerability of the economy, not to mention the housing market, that Mark Zandi and Carl Case point to?
Well, I think it's interesting you phrase it that way. This was designed to be a temporary credit, and it was always set to expire. So, what's happened since then is the mortgage market has, in fact, improved. The federal government has done an enormous amount more to do it. And if you go into a mode where you have a tax credit that was explicitly designed to be short-term, but you extend it and then extend it, what's the track record of government policies that are continually extended and then when you try to get rid of them? You almost are never able to. You become dependent on it. It's a dependency. I think the other programs the government has put in place have been enormously successful, and I think if you're going to have the government spend money, let's spend money on stimulus designed to create jobs and not on a specifically targeted thing like the tax credit.
I want to come to that. Let's hear from our listeners a little more here. Lee in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Lee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think we need to do so much more to stimulate the economy, well, actually, the housing industry. That is the engine that drives America. You know, there are literally, I don't know what the number is, but there's just a huge number of people that are really just somewhat abandoned. But when you think of everyone who does something that touches the house It's just an incredible amount. You know?
But what do you say? What do you say, Lee, to Tom Lawler's argument that there's so much being done already? At what point does it become like a permanent subsidy to such a huge industry we can't afford it?
Well, we've helped the banking industry. We've helped the car industry. But I think the numbers helped there are just minuscule compared to the number of people across all of America that are actually just been left to fend for themselves. I mean, you know, after a 30-year career, it's just like someone turned off the faucet. There's no work to be had. And, you know, I talk to builders. I talk to building suppliers. And they're all just sitting around, actually. They have to go find some other entry-level job. I mean, you know, when your income is cut to a fraction of what it was before, it's almost criminal to me.
Lee, we hear it. That's a very tough picture. Mark Zandi, what about the efficiency of stimulating the economy via the giant housing market? Is this an efficient use? We don't have infinite federal dollars. Lee and others in the industry, of course, would like it, and who can blame them and not feel sympathy for them? But is this the best way to stimulate?
Well, I think in our particular circumstances, it's important, yes, because housing is central to the current financial and economic crisis. I mean, this is where it all began, and it's not going to end until the housing downturn comes to an end. So I think the caller is right. We need to focus on the job market, but we also need to focus on the housing market and make sure that we stem these house price declines. In my view, nothing works unless house prices stop falling. I mean, it's a corrosive on the financial system. It undermines household wealth. It's still far and away the most important asset in most people's balance sheet. So we've got to bring these house prices decline to an end or nothing works.
Let's hear from Rob in Farmington, Connecticut. Rob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
My point is this. We always look to the government to fix our problems, and the truth is, and I think everyone will agree, that there's no silver bullet that's going to fix the housing crisis. So, you know, while it might be helpful to extend the first-time buyer credit, it's not the real answer. If you look at what got us into this mess, in my opinion, it's Freddie and Fannie Mac. They are the guarantor agency that made mortgage brokers have the ability to sell mortgages. They underwrote mortgages with poor credit quality, and that's why we're in the mess we're in now. Now we're going to look to the same government to try to fix these problems. I think we let this solution work itself out, and the government should not be involved.
But what if we stumble into another big downturn in prices? People looking for a bargain may love that, but Mark Zandi makes the case it could crunch the whole economy down. We'll really be in a ditch and it could end up costing us more.
Well, Tom, it goes to the fundamental question of what's the role of government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the role of government is to provide price supports for all of our markets, obviously we have one answer. I believe that the role of government is to get involved in things the government can actually fix. Housing is not something I think they can fix.
No silver bullet, so bite the bullet. Mark Zandi, what do you say?
Well, you know, I agree with the caller that in 99% of the time, the government should stay out of the way, that the private sector can do the job and does it very, very efficiently. That's been our history. But there is 1% of the time when we need government to intervene aggressively, and I think we're in that time. And, I government has put forward, used a lot of resources to get us where we are. And to great success. I mean, just think where we were 6, 9, 12 months ago. Major financial firms were evaporating. The stock market was crumbling. House prices were caving. I mean, it was a complete mess, and we've made a lot of progress. But we can't give up now. We have to make sure that the economy is on sound ground, and we need strong government support to get us out of this mess and then to exit. And I think, you know, it is encouraging to me that we're having this debate and that policymakers are having this debate, because it means that they don't want to extend these things. Only under severe distress will they do that. And so down the road, when the housing market's on its own 2 feet, they will exit.
Tom Lawler, we've got Johnny Isaacson in Georgia saying that in his 33-year career in real estate, he's never seen anything like the current housing market in America. Of course, he's by no means alone in that. But if you're not for extending, the tax credit, what is your scenario that's not a dire scenario? How does it work? If foreclosures are coming on almost inevitably, a bigger wave, how do we avoid a real bath here?
Well, I think the government I actually agree with Zandi that the time for government intervention, you know, occasionally is, I get it. But there is massive intervention. There is the government, either directly or indirectly, is 90% of the mortgage market right now. the government programs and government mortgages that were originally designed to loan from a low and moderate income are now available to almost the entire housing market. The government is supporting mortgage rates. It's doing a ton. And quite frankly, first-time home buyer tax credit does not deal with the foreclosure problem. It really doesn't. So I think the government has been involved, and I think if you're going to focus on dollars, you know, the government is already providing massive, massive, massive support to housing. And so if you're going to spend money, target it either directly on the foreclosure problem, directly on the job market issue, but don't continue to have these big tax credits because it benefits very few and it costs everybody money.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Stephen in Boston. Stephen, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, how are you, Tom?
Okay.
Good. Part of what I'm saying is that the $8,000 that they give you when you buy a house, I think that really pushes the price of the house up. It allows people to spend money that they don't have, and it just doesn't seem to help. I mean, people kind of are grabbing at straws. And then the whole thing, the fear of falling prices, the only people who are afraid of that are the banks. And, you know, ultimately, I think the real question is, have we learned our lesson? And are we going right back to where we were before with spending, the cost of a house going up? And I think the real point is people miss is that these aren't houses. These are people's homes. People work hard for these things, and they need somewhere to live without the stress of having to know that I have to pay this bank $100 or $150, $200 a day just to live here to meet the mortgage.
Well, foreclosures up and down the block. Stephen, thanks for your call. Mark Sandy, what about the lesson learned issue here? I mean, you know, does more support mean propping up a market that, I don't know, the economy, the market history is telling us was unsustainable?
Well, I think, I think the point is that the house prices are down over, Chip will tell you, the house prices are down over 30% from their peak.
Right.
And I think we're at a point where we're going to overshoot. The price is going to go lower than anyone would feel comfortable with. And it's a problem for 75 million Americans who own their own home. Two-thirds of households own a home.
What might overshoot mean?
It means that prices continue to fall and fall well below any reasonable level, any level that people would expect is, you know, a representative of the value of their property.
You think that's a real possibility, having gone down 30% already?
Yes, I do.
How much more? That much again? Less than that?
I think at least another 5-10%, because foreclosures are continuing to mount, and they will be pushed into the marketplace, and that will drive down prices further. So I don't think the price declines are over, no. And that you get into this very self-reinforcing negative cycle, that is, price declines beget foreclosure because people who are underwater are the people who will lose their homes in foreclosure. Those foreclosed properties are dumped on the market that cause prices to fall even lower, and you're in this vortex. And so that's the thing we've got to break.
Carl Case, when you hear that and you think we could tumble into another real sort of down swoop on the back of another fall in home prices, then you look at, okay, maybe it costs $16 billion or something like that to extend this to June with all the money that's been spent. And I know this is a slippery slope, but you could imagine people thinking, well, another $16 billion in the great scheme of things, not so much. Let's do it to forestall some big second stumble here, Carl.
Well, it really does depend on what you think will happen absent the extension. And if house prices do continue to fall or are pushed back into decline from where they are now, then I would be for it. But I disagree a little bit with Mark on where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are real signs that we're getting flat, not in the foreclosure market, but in the rest of the market. There's more activity.
Can you separate
there's more
them?
More activity by almost every – oh, yeah, you can. I think they really are separate. People who are shopping in the foreclosure market are not shopping in the rest of the market. We do about 5.1 million existing home sales a year. We do about 450,000 new home sales a year. Of those, the foreclosures are about 2 million this year.
That sounds like a big number, and we hear it's creeping up into, you know, not any margins of the housing market, but the heart of it.
I don't disagree that there's going to take a lot to clear that end of the market, but I do believe there's more strength showing in the market, and I don't think prices are going to fall in general by as much as Mark does. That makes me a little more skeptical. But I certainly believe there's the possibility that that could occur. I mean, the thing is, we really don't know the future.
Oh, can I make a quick point, Tom?
Yes.
Because Chip is making an excellent point. I mean, it really, a lot of it boils down to your view of what's going on and where we're headed. If Chip is right and his more optimistic view is correct, and I certainly hope that it is, then great. But what if he's wrong and things do continue to erode? Then we're in a very, very difficult situation because the economy broadly, we're at almost 10% unemployment. We're still losing jobs. The government's running a $1.4 trillion budget deficit. I don't know that we want to take that chance.
Fierce options here. I'm grateful to each of you for your time and thoughts in this hour on homes and the housing market. Mark Zandi in San Diego, chief economist at Moody's Economy.com. Thank you for joining us again today, Mark.
Thank you.
Thomas Lawler at Lawler Economic and Housing Consulting, Leesburg, Virginia. Tom, thanks for being here.
Well, I'd love to be here.
And Carl, Chip Case with Case Shiller Index. Always great to have you. Thanks for joining us, Carl.
Thanks very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.